Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today we are our second episode of Myths of the Mace, and we're going to be focused on wands, clubs, and staves. We're going to begin our exploration with Joanne Gajowski. Greetings and welcome, Joanne. How are you?
Great. Happy to be here. Happy Halloween.
You as well. We had an episode the other day and with Serpenta Satori and with Set of Kemet, and they talked a little bit about the scepter or staff or wand in the Egyptian tradition and generally in the Norse tradition. So today we're continuing with you. You are Hellenistic, but also trained in a variety of traditions. Is that not correct?
Yes. And I'm a big fan of wands and staves and maces because of how they work, like we're discussing tonight, in transformation work. They work with air and fire because, you know, you can throw a mace, you can throw a wand, energy with a wand. So you're working with combined energies, which is always good. And they are most associated, if you look at the tarot or the Rider-Waite deck, with fire, intention, passions, things that no longer serve. And if you look at, you know, items like the mace or the stave, they can either direct energy, like I said, or they can also take things down. If you have to, you know, transformation, if you're tearing down and doing inner work, and you see the mace, you know, the mace and the wand, you might see a lot of that in a reading if you're going through a transformative time. They're also associated with Hermes, as you know,
yeah.
And Mercury, you know, so communication. So they're a very powerful tool, whether it be in any tradition, I think, you know, as far as energy goes.
I think they're pretty powerful also. In my own personal experiences, I used a staff for a very short period of time when I was exploring the Arthurian mythos, which is derived from the Celtic. And when I was exploring the Celtic mythos itself, the Dagda, who I resonated with, has a club, which is also a staff. And that has magical transformative powers over life and death.
Yep.
The communion symbol is the cauldron. In the Norse, you have Thor with his hammer and the oath ring, which serve the same purpose. And the Greek, of course, you have Hercules with his club. And few people know this, but one of his sacred symbols is the cornucopia as well. So that's the same as the oath ring and the cauldron in the other mythologies. So the club of Hercules is a living symbol. It's not only a weapon, but it's also a stick that can be replanted into an olive tree. And some of the myths that happens in some of the stories about the cultus of Hercules, that's been reported as well. And Hercules, though he was never a king in his lifetime, he was cheated of his kingship. Many dynasties subsequently ran from his loins, I guess. And his club evolved into the scepter. So that's why the symbolism is important to me. And I recently, the universe has put me in a position where I'm doing like a conjuring magic for kids, for entertainment, to teach them scientific principles.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
So I'm doing that type of
thing. That sounds like fun. I love working with kids. They're so unjaded and they're just so receptive and it's just fun, you know?
Yes, it is.
Kids are fun to work with.
And
but yeah, to me,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay. In my meditations, the club has evolved into a new type of weapon or a new type of implement. So I'm still exploring the symbolism of that, but it's a very theosophical form it's now taken with me. Although echoes of Mjolnir have been popping up and also the club of the Hercules and the Dagda as well. So this is a journey I'm currently on. and you being one of my major sages and seers, I appreciate all the insight and wisdom you can throw on it.
Well, to me, I think that's perfect symbolism because think about it. You're going through a change. You're transforming into a different state of mind, or you're looking at it from a different perspective. You're changing. You're building something new, whether it be a new thought, a new energy. And really, what do wands and staves do? I mean, if you look at the wand throughout history, like you said, it evolved into the scepter. And what is that? It's a symbol of power. Like, where are you directing your power, you know, and where are you channeling that energy? And even if you look at the Athame on the altar or anything like that, it is something that you direct your energy with to move forward. But when you work with wands, you're using the power of air and fire. So you're communicating directly to the universe and you're sending it out there. Fire is quick, hot, and transformative, but you also have to be careful because fire, what does it do? It burns. So, you know, I think it's very to what you're working with right now, you know.
Have you ever worked with the Mythic Tarot, the old deck?
Not the Mythic. I've always pretty much worked with the Rider-Waite is where I started from.
Mm-hmm.
And but I work with all different kinds of decks now, you know, so... But is there, does the symbolism change there, or is there a different interpretation of the wand there?
No, the interpretation of the wand is very similar, but they do something very interesting in it. Each suit has a series of myths that are related. So with wands, Zeus is the ace because this quest is really a result of Zeus's will, because the Golden Fleece ultimately belongs to Zeus and is a symbol of kingship. So he sets in motion, and then from 2 to the 10, they follow the story of Jason and the Argonauts. Then the court cards are Theseus for the king. Theseus may or may not have been an Argonaut, depending on which version of the tale you're reading. They have Penelope, who definitely wasn't an Argonaut. They have Bellerophon, who definitely wasn't an Argonaut. And then they have Phrixus, who's definitely part of the Argonaut story as well. So it's all about leadership and all about the imposing of will. And the 10 contains a very powerful lesson that the burning idea that dominates your mind that you work so hard toward actualizing might become your prison. So that's always something worth contemplating if you're trying to make a difference in the world. That
definitely.
Build it, you might get stuck in it. So to be very careful what you wish for and what you apply your energies toward. So I know whenever I'm going
which is pretty much the message of the wand, you know. There's a lot of power there, how you channel it. I mean, throughout history, I mean, if you look, Moses had the staff and he parted the waters. You know, like I said, you've got kings and queens. You've got it directing energy, different energies. If you look at the magician card, he's, you know, got the raw, all the tools there. And what is it about? It's about directing your energy towards a goal. So symbolically, it relates to what you're doing very much, I think.
How have you used the wand or the staff, and are they interchangeable in your practice?
Mostly it's a choice, you know. I've never pretty much had a staff or anything like that. I've always used a wand, whether it be a crystal wand or a wooden wand, but I use them to direct energy, to whether it be outward. If I'm trying to set a goal and manifest it, I'm going to channel that energy, and it's going to channel that energy to whatever planetary aspect or whatever it is I'm working towards. What it is, it's like a focal point, you know, but it's also like a power surge, you know what I mean? Because you've got that fire in there, and it's also swift because you've got air behind it too. Because that's the thing with the wands and the staves and the maces, they not only represent fire, they also have some air energy going on in there. So, you know, which is why it relates to Mercury. I mean, think about it, Hermes, and he's the messenger, you know, he's all about communication. So you're getting that message out to the universe of what your goal is and what you're trying to bring in. So that's how I've always used it. I've also used it to bring power to me. If I'm in a ritual and I'm drawing down the moon, I might have my crystal in my hand, my crystal wand, and I might have it up and I might be, channeling that energy from the moon into that wand directed to me, whatever chakra I'm working with, whether it be heart, root, third eye, that's how I use them. I use them as channels of energy. And I always look at them as messengers. Like if I see it in a reading, I know that it's about my passion, whether it be if they're reversed, I know that it's something that no longer serves me. There's something I need to change in my desires and my passions. You know, they're about your passions, good and bad. You know, people always think of passion as lust and, sexual passion, but that's not what they're just about. They are about that, obviously, as well, too, but they're more about energy, about how you bring things to you. What's your passion in life? What's your purpose? And sometimes you reach a point where something in your life no longer serves, and they can be messengers of, hey, it's time to redirect that fire and that energy back within or back without, depending on what you're working on.
Can you give us an example of something that you devoted your time and energy to and helped manifest into the world, and how you used the wand in that working?
What I've used my wand personally for, I've been doing a lot of inner work since my father passed away. So what I have been doing is I've been channeling, energy to make changes in my life, to cut out things that no longer serve me. That's what my wands were telling me these past couple of years. I had a lot of change in direction. When I started my degree, it was for teaching. I was originally going to be a teacher, and that wasn't resonating well with me. I knew I wanted to work with kids. I knew I wanted to deal with people that suffer from PTSD and trauma, and it was all about figuring out how to direct that energy. So when I did my working, and I did, my working, I would take my wand and I would hold it to my chest and I would meditate and send out the energy along with my working and my regular candles and whatever else I use. And I would hold it to my chest and I would bring that energy and that light and that passion, give me that passion, show me the passion, show me the direction. Wands are about direction too. When you hold a staff, it's taking you in a direction. When you point it, it's you're pointing it in a direction. So, show me the direction. And that's kind of, I don't know, trying to think of how to word it. But that's how I use it. I kind of incorporate it into the whole ritual, depending on what I'm working on. And basically what I was working on at that time was changing my direction. Where am I going? What am I doing? Here I am. I have this. It's not what I want to do. So where am I going to go with it? And that's what led me down the mental health road to where I'm at now. So that, and it has worked out beneficial to me in many ways.
Yeah, that is a challenging field, as you know, because we've discussed it before. I worked in the mental health field for over 3.5 decades. It's generally rescue from the underworld work, because you're bringing yourself into the underworld and you're helping souls let go of the underworld that they're in and come out of it.
Yeah. And so basically I need my staff and my rod to pull me between those worlds, because it's so easy to get out of balance. When you're doing transformation, like I said, you want to channel that energy carefully. You want to direct it obviously in the right way. But again, like I said, when you're dealing with fire, you might get burned. So you have to be careful. And, that rod can help give you balance. When you hold that rod, or staff, and you're walking, and like you're taking a journey up a trail, and you have that staff in your hand, that staff helps guide you. It holds you steady. It keeps your balance. It keeps your focus. It focuses your intent. So when I use them, I look at them as a lot of focus on intent and swift action. Like if I want that working to go fast and that energy to get out there fast, I'm going to use that wand to direct that energy towards what I'm working towards.
Awesome. And we've talked before about your Hellenistic tradition. That is something that you chose, Star and Ravenhawk's church, I guess, provided a very eclectic training and then left it up to each group how they approach the divine. And you and your group have chosen the Hellenistic gods of old. Are there parts of that tradition that bear on wands and staves and clubs and maces and things like that?
Well, definitely. We've always used those in our group rituals, whether it's to represent the elements, whether it's to, like I said, direct energy to, you know, or to call down energy. I use it a lot, you know, to do my banishing pentacle. I do it a lot with my work with Demeter. When I work with her, I put it towards my heart because I want that heart energy from her, that mother energy. I want to direct it. You know, I'll take one of my wands that were like my rose quartz, you know, and I'll direct it towards me to give me that guidance and energy to do what I need to do for my daughter and for my family or for myself. And most importantly, for self-love, you know, to give me that strength to see and to discern what's no longer good. You know, that thing, life and death, you know, what serves, what no longer serves, to help me get that distinction, to love myself enough to know what I need to get rid of and when it's time.
And you, like me, have chosen the path of the archetypes. In that you consciously live out the story of your operant archetype through, and that becomes your life. And it very much impressed me how you expressed it. You expressed it very much in Joseph Campbell and Jungian terms, and you were very conscious.
Oh, yeah.
Most people
big fan of Jung.
But you live it very consciously, and you make use of it in your professional work as well as your private life.
Yeah, Carolyn Mace is also big on the archetypes, too. If you listen to any of her stuff, you know, she's big on the different archetypes and how they play out in people's life, you know. And, yeah, I mean, the archetype that you are basically, I feel, sets your path, you know. You know, I think it either sets you up for success or failure, depending on the archetype that you pick. That's how I look at it. So, I try to look at it as when it, like I said, I work a lot with Demeter. I just got that beautiful statue that I ordered from Greece that, and I love it so much. So now I can like actually look her face to face and talk to her and tell her, you know, help me to see better, to be strong, to know when it's time to cut the field or prune it or eliminate things or grow something new, you know. You know, they're also symbolic of springtime. You know, the wands are symbolic of growth and spring and transformation. Bring me that new growth that I need to move forward. You know, that's very big for me.
In the Hercules mythos, the club, which gets transplanted and grows, it has two words designating it. One is ropalon, which is like a club, like a billy club, you know. And other one is clavos, and clavos means flowering branch, or more precisely, it means like when they graft one type of tree onto another type of tree, they take a branch and they cut it and put it in a cutting of the original, the tree that they're joining it to, and then it becomes part of that tree. So those are very much in line with what you're saying about the wands and the clubs and the staves and the maces in your tradition as well. It's something new. It's something, it's new life, maybe different than what's expected, but still a new life nonetheless.
You know, a lot of burning away of the old, you know, if you think of the fire when you're, you know, moving forward or whether it be a huge life change, a job change, a relationship change, you know, you need to burn away that old thinking, that old mentality, that old school, you know, like you have to come up, you have to change everything, you know, everybody, you have to do a 180, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I'm very big on getting rid of what no longer serves, but when you do that, you also have to think in terms of what am I bringing in? you know. So when you're working with wands and staves and the mace, you have to look at that aspect, which I think the Hercules Club, I think this, that's beautiful because it shows you both sides. Yeah, you can tear down and destroy, but with this same tool, you can also bring that growth and that connection that you need to bloom, to move forward, you know. So I think that's awesome.
So you use the wand primarily for fire, even though it could be of the air?
I'm directing energy, you know, charging it quick. It's going to send it out quick. You know, fire and air are swift, and they work together. You know, you add air to a fire, what happens? It boosts out and, you know, gets bigger. So you want to channel that energy. So if I'm, you know, if I want to manifest some quick money, I'm going to be using, you know, that wand in that energy to direct it into my working that I'm doing. You know, I'm going to take that energy from the universe and I'm going to put it in there. Or I'm going to take that energy from Mercury and put it in my communication. You know, if I have a court case, you know, help me to, you know, communicate and speak, you know, educated and say what I need to say in the right way. You know, give me the words that I need to communicate. So, yeah, to me, it's a definitely big channeling tool and a very big part of transformation. If you want to direct your energy, it's precision because you can point with it. I mean, think about it. If you're a teacher teaching on a blackboard, you have the pointer. Why? Because you want to point the people's energy to that one particular item that you're looking at. So to me, wands are also, and staves are about precision. You know, you're pointing in a direction and it's very precise. You know, if you're looking off in the distance and you're saying, I want to go to that cave, and you point that stave at that cave, that's the direction you're headed in. So it's about precision and about energy with that, you know, precise energy and strong, fast energy. You got to be careful when you work with it, you know. You got to be very careful what you say when you work with it because, you know, my mentor used to tell me it's like a legal contract, you know. You have to be very precise. Otherwise, things can backfire really quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, careful what you wish for.
Yeah, definitely. That's often the case. Do you use the wand with crystals or with essential oils or a particular type of incense? Does the type of wood matter?
Some people use wood wands and that type of – that matters to them. I use crystal wands.
Okay.
which are direct at a point. And I have a beautiful clear one that I use. If I'm working with water, I have a beautiful ocean jasper one. If I'm grounding and I really need some earth energy, I have a shungite one. And I also have one with carnelian in it to me, that's, you know, the blood of Isis, fire energy, you know. So that's the type of wands I use. And you can get them in all types of ways. Some people, to me, I look at it this way, your wand will find you. Like
okay.
If you're looking for a wooden wand, my friends travel in the woods and you find that perfect piece, you know. I've always been a fan of making your own tool, but there are some beautiful wands out there. And, you know, if you're into that historical precision type of thing, then yeah, you're going to want to, you know, elm wood or whatever, you know, associates with what you're working with or what your tradition is. But for me, the best tools have always found me. Like I found my Atame in an old antique shop in Salem, and it was so cool. It had all Egyptian writing on the blade and a little mummy on the top for the handle. You know, and that's my altar tool, you know, and I found that along with the ankh. So I bought the pair together and I have them on my little Egyptian shelf that I have. And yeah, so I mean, to me, the best objects always find you. But by all means, you know, to each their own, you know what I mean? You do you. So if you're, you know, if you're very specific on that. But to me, magic is about intention and your connection with nature, the world, the universe, your gods and goddesses. And they usually send you what you need is what I find.
I find the same thing. And it's no exaggeration to say that some of those things that find themselves here are quite miraculous or at least unlikely. For a very long time, when I was working with Mjolnir, the Norse thunder energy represented by hammer, when I would ask confirmation, it would always be something very extreme. Once it was a thunderstorm, and other times it's finding a prehistoric hammer, a real prehistoric hammer in wherever I was walking. And in Europe, that's, there are old prehistoric settlements there. So I guess you could say, it's Europe, you know. But I've found prehistoric hammers on beaches in Long Island after asking for a sign. Yeah. One of them was glowing red in the light of the sun setting. And I picked it up, it was a prehistoric hammer. I could recognize the way it was etched and everything, see where the wood would go and where the leather thongs would be tied.
That is so cool.
So again, it was very unlikely that I would encounter prehistoric hammers, and yet that's how the universe chose to show me that, yes, I was on the right path, or to answer my question in a way that I couldn't dismiss it as something in my head.
You know, if you want to do a wooden wand, you can go out in nature, and a lot of my friends have cut their own. A lot of people use copper tubing, and then they fill it with different crystals, depending, or with the elements, and then they decorate them and wrap them in beautiful ways. I'm very just, to me, I like the crystal wands because it's part of the earth. It's energy, think about what it took to create a piece of clear quartz. And, when you look inside of it, it looks like it's got its own whole world going on in there, they always fascinate me. So to me, and I always find them at ridiculous prices and in the most unlikely places,
Yes, I know what you mean.
So I have a wand that I'm sure would be over close to $200 anywhere else that I picked up for $23. So, I said, things will find their way to you. If you ask and you ask with the perfect intent, you have to let your intent be known. So what I've learned is energy is all about intent. And I try to keep it as natural as possible. I'm not the most crafty person to make my own wands. I could probably do something simplistic. But I do have some cool pieces of wood that I've found over time that I keep near my altar, especially near my ocean altar. I find a lot of cool pieces of driftwood because that's got that energy, that water energy, I'm all about the energy that comes from the elements and the earth and how they align with the planets and the gods and goddesses,
Awesome. We're going to proceed with Serpentis Satori in a minute, but please stay on the line because I love your interactions with him and I love your thoughts with his. Satori's been a mage, sage, and seer for over 20 years in my life.
Oh, wow, I'm excited.
He seems to pop up whenever I do something public because a lot of times I'm kind of like invisible and just doing stuff with a very limited circle of people. But whenever I go public, Satori's been popping up consistently for over two decades. So,
important. He's got a message.
Yes, he is. So without further ado, Serpentis Satori.
Very much the weirdest of us all. Well, I'm a Templar who's a child of Akate who worked at Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo.
Yes, you're
there's right. Nothing about that I've never lied about. And that's who I guess I am.
Now, you were telling me earlier today, you were talking about Agrippa and you were talking about all sorts of grimoires and I thought it'd be really interesting for you to share this information, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on what Joanne shared with us. I'd like to hear her thoughts on what you're about to share.
I think our four wands and our four elemental things probably go back to Dr. William Westcott in the Golden Dawn, because they do not go back to Agrippa, and they do not go back to anyone before Agrippa. So if they do not go back to Agrippa, well, I mean, if they're historical, they'll go back to that guy or that guy or that guy. So we're asking a question about why does the wand go that way when it probably is because Dr. Westcott said so. And Dr. Westcott said so, and thus it becomes Golden Dawn and Wicca, because Dr. Westcott said so.
So where do you place the wand? Would you place it with fire or with air or with both, as Joanne did?
I think that's an opinion issue. I think if you prefer the dagger as fire, you prefer the dagger as fire. If you prefer the wand as air, because both arguments are pretty good. And one of my YouTube wishes actually had an argument earlier this week with me. And she wasn't sure, like, well, should I say or should I say? And I'm like, wands are fire because Dr. Westcott said so. And if you don't believe Dr. Westcott and the Golden Dawn, that's where your wishes are.
Well, we all buy into systems of belief or systems of symbolism. Initially, to learn the particular system and how it works. But then, as Joanne stated earlier, you do you. You find what works for you and you follow that. Like, for instance, with me, I don't really do any physical ceremonies. I do things in my head. So I don't really
need anything. You are very anti-ceremonial.
Not anti-ceremonial, but not a ceremonial type of person, except when I'm marrying people or doing priestly duties like that. Then I get into the ceremony. But for my own type of interaction with the universe, I've always found, because situationally, circumstances are hardly ever ideal. Like, for instance, Athena is allergic to incense. So the frankincense and the myrrh and all that type of stuff that I used, the pine needles when I was growing up, I can't use that anymore without it bothering her. But I can remember what they smell like. So I use my memory to evoke the feeling of or the smell of the frankincense, the myrrh, or any other herb I happen to be burning. And if I don't remember what it smells like, then I'll try it outside, you know, just to get something fresh from my memory. And the same thing, although I physically have, like today I received in the mail from Amazon my working maces for my mace routine. So they're physical objects. But I know enough about dynamic tension and muscle control when until I get to the next set of them, which will be heavier, I could imagine it and have a workout as if I actually had the items. So personally, I don't use any items, or I don't have to. But I'm very interested in the
symbol. No one ever used his items. That's Clive Barker. Our symbols are just symbols to keep us away from the real magic.
Okay. Care to explain that?
Clive says that we believe we do the rituals because we do the rituals because they take more time. Clive says we are doing the magic because we do not believe in true magic.
But Clive says that, just like Dr. Westcott said the other thing.
That's the problem with real wizards. I am always going to quote the other guy. I'm always going to quote Socrates or Clive, because I'm going to say the philosopher says. I am not agreeing with the philosopher, but there's the philosopher, and he says this. And until you can disagree with the philosopher as a hermeticist, I have to say, hermetic philosophy says this.
Okay, understood. Joanne, in your group, do you follow the same protocol, or the same idea, or do you have a different idea about the use of objects and the use of ritual?
Well, for me, I take a different perspective because I see it as a tool. Scott Cunningham said it, a spell is as simple as tossing a stone in the water. It's what the intent and the energy is behind it. And like you said, you use your mind. Like this gentleman said, these are just symbols that we use to, extract the process. I look at it as a way for people to learn until they get to that point when they're just learning or whatever. It gives them something tangible to help them direct that energy to keep their focus. That's kind of more, when you first start out, everybody wants all the bells and whistles and toys and, I want the broom, I want this, I want that. But then, the more you get into your practice and how you work it, like I said, a lot of times it's just me sitting in my room meditating or doing whatever I need, unless it's, a Sabbath or something like that. And then, you bring out the ceremonial things or, like I said, if I need to do a specific working. But, it is about the energy more than it is the object. But, I think symbols are – we've always had symbols throughout history. And, hermetics has their symbols. Different pantheons have their own symbols. So, I don't know. I'm a little different on the thought. I'm not a hermetic I'm not a Golden Dawn, so I don't know.
That's the virtue of these conversations, because we're all talking from the point of what we've learned in our journey, and we're all open to listening to what other people learned and seeing things from a broader perspective. It's not going to be the purpose of any of these conversations to change anybody's mind or to convert them, just have them think about things and maybe see things from a broader perspective. But you're both right. It's till you get to the point where you're familiar enough with what you're doing to experiment and try your own thing and then try to prove or disprove the thing.
Well, that's witchcraft as a craft. That's magic as the art of magic. Says Clive himself.
So today we're quoting Clive Barker.
Well, I mean, he's listening anyway, so let's just do it.
Okay, why not? Hi, Clive Barker. Thank you for listening. Years ago, does anyone remember Donald Tyson? He wrote a bunch of books for Llewellyn, including books on runecraft.
He wrote some very weird hermetic books.
Yeah, he also took the Cthulhu mythos of H.P. Lovecraft and his successors and created a system of magic. He wrote a few books, and I believe he had a tarot deck or an oracle deck using those.
Images. Yeah, he did do an oracle deck that was really weird.
Do you remember him, Joanne?
I remember seeing his books, but I never really read any of them. No,
yeah,
I know of him, but I don't know. I don't really know what he wrote about.
Yeah, he was a very interesting fellow. And he and I, in addition to matters esoteric, we shared a love of weight training or bodybuilding. We had a series of discussions about working out as a form of magic, because you have your implements, you have your dumbbells, your barbells, your kettlebells, you have all these different things that you have to learn how to move without injuring yourself. And you have the intent to create a particular type of body, and that involves knowing rep ranges and all sorts of dietary information. And we talked about
that's like Tai Chi. You move with intention.
Right.
Every move that you make is with intention. You don't have to do 100, things fast repetitively, but you do it slow and focused, and you get the same result.
Focus on the movements that are more likely to get you the result that you want. So there is like a science to it, but everybody's body is different. So rep ranges may vary, the amount of macronutrients. And we talked a lot about placebo effect. Like, I still don't know how effective bodybuilding shakes are, but I've been drinking bodybuilding shakes since I was a child and started with the weights, only because that's what bodybuilders do. So to this day, I have no idea how much value that actually adds, but I know that it reinforces my belief that I'm accomplishing something because I'm drinking protein shakes as part of what I'm doing. And I found the same to be true of any type of magical work. Also, in my family, in addition to all the Greek stuff, my father especially was very much into American magic, which is like the law of attraction, positive thinking, and things like that.
Yeah,
so that's part of what I'm doing. And a lot of times that I practice this American magic, and the theosophy that I like, and a lot of the esoteric systems also developed in America as well. So it's very interesting, and they all have their own logic that if you ascribe to it, it works miraculously. And I know when I've studied other cultures and other systems, if I eventually buy into them, they serve quite well until I find that you don't need this and get rid of it with Occam's razor, that some things are just not necessary for me to achieve my intent.
Well, again, it's all ways to channel energy. Again, it's about the energies that we're working with, whether they're planetary alignments, whether they're us to the universe. We're all made up of energy. So, again, it's just a way. These are all, I think, just ways for us to learn to channel it and harness it and maybe develop discipline, towards channeling it. Because you have to have a very specific mindset. What you're doing when you're putting on your ritual clothes, and I'm sure with Golden Dawn, you're creating energy as you're doing your work, and bringing out these wonderful tools that they use and things. So, I think it's all about channeling energy is the basic message. They're tools to direct energy.
And Satori, how do you have anything to add to the use of wands, staves, clubs, and maces?
Well, it's all symbolism. We all accept that is symbolism to allow our greater unconscious to do that.
That's
a way to open your mind to that energy? Is that what you're saying there? The symbols are what bring
well,
us to
the,
that?
Well, the four elements come from Westcott. They don't come from Agrippa. The four elements, as we now understand them, are just over 100 years old.
Well, Aristotle came up with the elements in the ether years ago, back in the time of ancient Greece, the time of Alexander.
Yeah, but Agrippa doesn't quote Pausanias.
So Agrippa is
a problem with that.
Magic. The books of Agrippa are still very highly respected by magicians. So what you're saying is that he didn't give us any guidance, and that someone did much more.
Agrippa and Levy did not say there are four tools. It's not in either of their books.
So you're saying that the
that happened later, which means it happened because of the Golden Dawn.
And there's not universal agreement, as you pointed out, because again, the wands in the sword could either mean air or fire, and it depends on what system you learn, what system you're going to use, and what you eventually decide for yourself. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, lots of Irish people think the sword is fire because of Cuchulainn, and because of that story.
Okay.
And Lou being the sun makes more sense as the wand if you're Irish.
And
it sort of works that way. And Lord of the Rings sort of seems to back that up.
So Tolkien ascribed to that view as well.
It appears to.
I'm going to ask Joanne this question because we've talked about it endlessly. Joanne, we've talked in the past about how although most people use actual cultural systems like Greek and Celtic and Arthurian and Norse and Templar and so forth, they use actual traditions as their inspiration, you can just as easily work magic with identification with pop cultural type of mythologies like Tolkien or Martin or superhero mythology, that it's possible using the same archetypes and the same stories to create magical effects. Where are you on this topic?
I feel that I kind of disagree in a way, because I think they are important through, you know, learning over time in different traditions, symbols like that help direct energy is how I look at it as. And like you said, whether it be stories, like I use Demeter and you use Hercules, you see where these symbols come in to help us to do that energy. But yeah, you can use anything that you want, really. I mean, you know, you can use a Dungeons and Dragons game if you really want to get technical on the laws of magic, you know. But
well, no, he and I have gone that way.
You know, but to me, it's about you, your inner, like, what's your intent? Like, what are you trying to get out of this? And to me, it's a journey of the self. You know, when I look at the elements, I look at earth, air, fire, water. I look at what they do. You know, water is emotions. It's cleansing. Air is swift. It also cleanses. It also moves. It also brings things. You know, earth, steady, manifestation, what's in the now. You know, that's how I look at the elements. And, yeah, you can see that through different superheroes. You can see it in different ways. And whatever works for you, you know, that's how I see it. How seriously you'll be taken in the real magical world, I don't know. But, you know, if you go in with, you know, like, say, pirate tradition or whatever, you know, are people going to take you seriously or not, you know? So, but it's all about what works for you and your personal magic and whatever you use to move that energy. What you're trying to do is move energy and attract energies in your favor to manifest a goal. And, you know, you said, like you said, you look at a lot of American things like The Secret and all these things. And what is it about? It's about aligning your energy with what's out there. So
Right. Whatever
it takes for you to align that energy, you know, whatever works for you, I'm not going to, you know, it doesn't mean I have to subscribe to it. But if that's what it takes for you to manifest a better job, is to have a mentality of, you know, superhero type thing, then yeah.
I have a story I'm going to share. It's a true story from when I first started out in the mental health field way back in the 1980s. I was one of the places I was working was an apartment program. That it was one of these places where several people who had psychiatric backgrounds were sharing an apartment until they learned how to become independent. And that involved being able to take care of the apartment and the bills and things like that, cook and prepare food and store food, and also hold down the job or go to school. So these are transitional type of programs. And there was one person, and they said he won't talk to you. He'll just make strange, nonsensical sounds. So I went to talk to him, and again, he didn't talk to me, just made sounds. And at one point, when listening to the sounds, I figured the sounds must mean something. I didn't think that they were nonsensical. But I recognized the sounds at one point. They were sounds from the movie Star Wars, which was still a very big thing. So in response to the things that I was saying, he was doing sound effects from Star Wars that reflected a particular set of feelings in the movie. And since I'd seen the movie like a dozen times, I was able to communicate with him and eventually started talking. So that's how powerful communication is. And again, it seemed like gibberish. And then because I gained the reputation for being able to communicate with people, even difficult people, they used to give me people that nobody wanted to deal with, to work with.
Yeah.
And one of the people, he also was supposed to be talking bizarrely and not making any sense. But this guy was into Norse mythology. So his answers reflected scenes from Norse mythology. So if you were familiar with Norse mythology, you could understand exactly what he's saying. And his utterances were phenomenally poetic and powerful if you understood Norse mythology. But if you didn't understand Norse mythology, then they were like scary gibberish a lot of times.
Yeah.
So that taught me a very powerful lesson. I've carried it into my talking with people of different cultures, of different religions, of different beliefs. That people are saying something, and usually it's something very important to them or very profound, but because you're using a different vocabulary, you're not going to understand them. And if you dismiss what they're saying because they don't make sense to you, you missed out on, you know, some really interesting information.
The real message.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's like what we were saying before, the superhero. What is that? You know, think about the analogy, you know, it's usually some person that's very quiet and subdued, you know, like Clark Kent or, Bruce Wayne or, you know, Wonder Woman. I forget what she was. She a news reporter or something? Or
but, she was a lot of things. In the Army, she was
diplomat. She's a diplomat.
Yeah. And, you know, and what it is what these characters do is enable these people to do things they wouldn't normally do as themselves. It gives
right.
them that power. So these symbols and these myths and these analogies, I think, are all ways that we can take that side of ourselves that says, stuck in the mundane world or the muggle world or whatever you want to call it. And what it does is it helps bring us into that state of mind to bring out that message, like you said, or that energy, or, you know, it puts you in that. Do you get where I'm going?
I don't know where you're going.
Our power as superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Nightwing says our power as superheroes because that's what Bruce Wayne taught me.
You know, Bruce Wayne as himself couldn't help anybody, but when he became Batman, he helped a ton of people. You know, same with Superman. Well, he came from another planet, but
even Oracle when she's in her wheelchair. Yeah.
You know, so they're all, you know, they're ways of empowering ourselves to do things we wouldn't normally do.
And that is an excellent place to start wrapping up today's show. That's a powerful thought. However, it's an incomplete picture because those of us who experience the archetypes will tell you, and you yourself know, Demeter is a person, not just a concept.
Mm-hmm.
We can all vouch for
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So. We will explore that on another episode. Joanne, you are going to have a show by the end of the year, I promise. Right now I'm shifting everything around, so you're going to be one of the official major sages and seers. And just like today, we started these conversations on maces and related objects. There are going to be future shows where we pick conversations. And once we get some practice doing it through these shows, I'm going to create a panel where we can discuss these things more in depth with more people. So you're definitely
awesome.
Invited to those as well. In the interim, how can people get in contact with you?
Me? Joanne.Kajewski@gmail.com or Facebook. I'm very big on there. I do a lot of communicating through there. Like I said, I haven't really created any other sites. I've always just been a person doing my thing. I guess it's something I need to look at to have a place for people to directly contact me. So for now, it's either Joanne.Gajewski, GAJEWSKI@gmail.com or on Facebook. Same thing. Look me up that way.
And I can vouch for Joanne being very responsive to contact. And she's also very involved with Star and Ravenhawk and the Witches Fest USA initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try to get Raven Ann to join us one day in one of these conversations as well.
Awesome.
And Satori, how can people contact you for now?
I am still fine with that going through you because I still need to do things I need to do.
Understood. And stated very enigmatically, leave us wondering what you're up to. Thank you both.
Well,
you can
let her call me later and I can give her what I can tell her that is not redacted.
Okay, I will pass on support contact information should you wish to continue.
All of us New Orleans wizards are always like, no, I don't really want to explain myself.
Understood. And thanks to everybody who listened in, whether you called in and you're patiently listening in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you're sitting with Clive Barker or somewhere right now.
I really don't think Clive and Anna Kendrick are listening. I think Clive is just being a jerk.
Okay. And,
I think Clive is just mad at me today.
So if you're not sitting with Clive Barker listening to us today.
And drinking martinis with Clive.
Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And in the short time that we have left, I'm going to play one of my favorite songs, If You Can Dream, because that's what it's all about. Thanks for your time, guys.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream.